before I start the podcast, I need to send out a thank you message to all my wonderful patrons. These are people that have signed up to donate each month money to help support the podcast. I appreciate them so much. They are Sean Poole, David and Jennifer Evans, Jeff Ulmer, Sylvian Groth, Liz Brunson, Yetta, Steve Van Sack, Robert Brown, Rob Barnett, Bella Corey, John Munson, Betsy Hodges, Levi Peter, Elizabeth Brunson, Stephen Malio, Steve Rogers, Dale Hosack, Terry Smith, Chris Bloom, and Mary Thomas. Thank you guys for being part of this community. If you want to join Patreon, it's really easy. Go to patreon.com, search for Seth Lessing Bruce, and from there you can log on and sign up for as little as $1 a month. Doing that, you get a handwritten thank you note from me. At certain tiers, you get unedited episodes. You get preview episodes. And you also can join my advisory council. These are the group of supporters who get first notice of when I'm trying something new, and they are able to give us feedback on what they think of these new projects. So thank you guys for being part of this. Now then, let's get on with the conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Seth Lessing Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. I have a new friend that we are going to have a blast because we've already been talking almost 10 minutes, and she has made me snort laugh already. So she is, how did you put it, Jersey Trash Tara?
No. Yes. Yes. I'll explain why. So to the listeners, hi, I'm Tara Giancaspro. I often get asked if my name is Tara or Tara. And pretty much anytime I'm asked this question, I say, oh, no, I am Jersey Trash. I am a Tara. I am not a Tara. Tara is some Fraser Crane, pinky out kind of shit. That is not me. I am a proud Italo Jew. I am a Tara. I'm Tara Marie, even. So, yes, that's how I put it. I'm full Jersey Trash till the day I die.
Are you Tara Marie only when you're in trouble with your parents?
Yes. Like, I'm shocked I'm even telling you I'm a Tara Marie. I don't ever admit that because it's so Guido. Like, it's so Staten Island. Like, Tara Marie Giancaspro. And, yeah, I usually don't admit that. So, I must feel safe with you.
I am glad. So, I have, unfortunately, a serial killer middle name. I am Jesse Wayne Jackson, right? So, yes. And growing up, I was Jesse Wayne. One word. Jesse Wayne? To this day, right? My mom still says Jesse Wayne. And for the longest time, there was a guy I worked with years ago that when he would call, he would go, Jesse Wayne. Right, as his way. And I would be like, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like, it wouldn't click to like the fifth time he did this. Oh, Wayne is just introducing himself.
I don't think I know this. Where are you from?
I'm in Dallas, Texas currently. We've lived here since 86, but I grew up, my dad was in the Army, so we moved around a lot. When he retired and my parents divorced, my mom settled in Louisiana, which is where she originally was from. So a small town called Lake Charles, Louisiana. If you look at Louisiana, it's a boot. It's the heel. Yes. And yeah, so I definitely have that Southern thing going on. A totally random story. We were in New York for the end of the second River tour. Okay. And when he did those three shows at Met where he broke all kinds of records, and we were there on night two when the couple got engaged. So it was my son, and that was only his second Bruce show. And at the time, maybe 26, 27, I have to do the math. But anyway, so he said to everyone who was a female, he called her ma'am. He said, ma'am. And they kept telling him, stop. You're making us feel like old ladies.
Yeah. Right?
And he said, I was 4 years old and I did not call someone ma'am. And my Mimi, which is what he called his grandmother, whipped my ass so hard on the butt that aww, I couldn't sit. And I don't care if we're in Queens, New York. If I don't call you ma'am, my Mimi's coming around that couch and kicking my ass.
Goodness. So wait, that was the 2016?
Yes.
Like August?
Yeah.
I was at one of those shows. That was my first Bruce show.
Oh, okay. I can't wait to hear this. You've already told us, but I'm going to give you another chance. Tell us a little about yourself. Who is Tara?
Yes, I live in New Jersey. Surprise, surprise. Born and raised. I am in the middle of a career transition. So I've been an executive assistant for many years, but I'm getting into events and production, which is always work I've done on the side. I am a writer. That's my primary creative output. I have a Substack where a lot of people don't know what Substack is. So I quickly tell them it's a blog that comes to your email inbox. You go to the blog, you put your email address, and every time I get a new post, it comes right into your email inbox and you can read it and delete it and move on with your day. So I write there about pop culture. I write about music. I've written about Bruce, write about things I'm up to in my personal life. And then I recommend resources like your podcast, things friends are writing or doing. And that's been my primary creative output lately. That's XOXO Gossip Giancaspro.
Do you find this more satisfying than doing a blog? I don't know if you've ever done a blog.
I think it ultimately is a blog. A lot of times I refer to it to people as the newsletter or my latest letter, but to people that are more familiar with the term blog, I call it a blog. It largely feels interchangeable. There is a comment section. The good thing about Substack is that it is a social network. So you find other Substackers and all of the people that might find your blog that are already Substack users are looking for people like me or people like yourself who are putting out some kind of creative project, whether it's a podcast, because Substack does host podcasts, or writing or art or whatever they decide to include there. So you do have an audience that really wants to find your work. And then the trick is, of course, making yourself known enough to bring them over. But I didn't even start this a year ago, and I have 1,800 subscribers. And I would have not fathomed that at all. So I love it because Substack has empowered me to find an audience.
Yeah. So I'm going to get to Bruce, but I'm interested in, you are perhaps living an alternate life. And here's why: I'm an alternate life to my wife. My wife spent the last part of her career as an executive assistant. She worked for a CEO. And then when he sold that company, she went to work for a private equity firm and was the office manager. But what she really enjoyed the most was planning board meetings. Planning, okay, all these board meetings are coming in. The board members, we've got to figure out where are we going to house them? What are we going to do to entertain them? What are we going to do to feed them? Oh, we're having a Christmas party. How do we plan this? So that was some of the funnest parts of her job. And she always thought, if I had more entrepreneurial spirit, I would go into event planning. So that's the part of the job I love the most. So tell me a little bit about that.
That was my exact thought process. I've done some really big events, like $75,000, 250 person events. And I'm the one who knew the folks at my company well enough to know, okay, Liz has celiac and I have to make sure there's a gluten-free option for her. And Mark just broke his foot. Like, these are all real things. Mark broke his foot. So I need to make sure that there's an elevator at the venue or that we can get him upstairs somehow. I knew my employees, and especially at the startup where I worked, where I was for 3 years, I got paid to be thoughtful, and putting those events together I got paid to be nice and be considerate of people that I was genuinely friends with and would go get lunch with. So it really empowered me to perform a kindness and get dental care for that. So exactly like your wife, that was the part of the job where it was the most fun. I really felt that the workday was different. I liked being an EA because it is such a dynamic workday. You're not just stamping papers over and over, but that was the most exciting part. Of course, you're picking out a menu and I was bringing in like a guy I know a guy named Val who has life-size Jenga and life-size Connect Four, so my coworkers wouldn't get too drunk because they were doing something else with their hands, like those little touches. And also, and this does relate to Bruce, and this is not me contriving anything, this is real. I hate having a quote fake email job lately. An executive assistant to me is a fake email job in a lot of ways. And I feel confident saying that because I've done it and I did it for 6 years. And I've never been in retail. I've never been in food service. I was always doing filing for companies at 16 or these administrative functions. And my father started as a mechanic when he was 12, working at the family auto body shop, retired as a fireman after 34 years of doing hard work, life risking work. My mom works for my hometown board of ed, parents who are very blue collar in that way. And me sitting there with my fake email job getting paid more than they got paid felt wrong. And in the Brucean New Jersey world in which I was raised, I was like, you know what? At least events, I'm like doing something with my hands and I'm not on my phone and I'm not using Microsoft Outlook, which to me is like Satan's programming tool. It really, truly does not walk hand in hand with the Lord, Jesse. And I'm hoping that I'm able to break free of that. And yes, events are voluntary. Events are not being a fireman like my father. It's not that important. But to some people, their wedding is the happiest day of their life.
Sure.
And
that
is really special. It brings families together. Maybe I'll do family reunions or retirement parties or like things that really, for me, it's like, oh, I made this person's special sacred life event really special. And same thing with my writing. And I've done some songwriting and put out some music. It's at least in the service of art. So even the grunt work or the fake email job of promoting your latest single is in the service of art and self-expression. And Bruce has inspired that because Bruce both writes about the working man and Bruce is an entertainer and an artist. And he really is a hero of mine. So it makes sense that I would look to him as that type of guiding light and breaking out of my work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself. And then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Growing up there in Jersey, I always like to start at the beginning. So what kind of music was your family listening to? What were you growing up listening to, Tara?
Not Bruce Springsteen. My parents told me, my mom told me, My dad is neutral to Bruce. I think he bought Born in the USA when it came out because everybody had it.
Yes,
but he gave
absolutely.
It to me and it was never opened. It had the sticker from, I don't know, Sam Goody, like one of those, like one of the record stores. And my mom told me one of the only things on our do not play wedding list for the DJ was Bruce Springsteen. And I was like, Jesus Christ, Mom. But I watched my parents' wedding video with them years later, and I forget what Bruce song it was, but there was a Bruce song, and I was like, the DJ defied you, Mom. Like,
that is awesome.
Face.
Yes.
So I grew up with disco and doo-wop.
Okay.
My dad, huge Bobby Darin fan, and then loved disco, and not in the whitewashed way. Like, my dad would have the Tavares on. He would have the black artists as opposed to the white artists that covered these songs and then reaped all the rewards.
Right.
So my dad growing up, I was listening to the Tavares and Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes and like good disco that came out of queer folks making music, black folks making music, the Philly disco scene. Like, my dad has great taste in music. And only later did I learn that he also liked the Doors and like the Allman Brothers and the Doobie Brothers when he was a teenager. But primarily it was disco and doo-wop in my house. My mom loves Celine Dion. I've gone to see Celine with my mom. She loves Barbara. So she really likes great singers who, maybe even if they don't have the most conventional sound, like Barbara has an unconventional, beautiful voice.
Sure.
My mom likes a belter. My mom likes show tunes. And so, yeah, I didn't grow up with Bruce. I grew up in the 90s, so my taste was informed by the radio. So your Spice Girls, Backstreet Boys, Britney Spears. And then around middle school, I'd say I started breaking into like pop punk and an almost emo pop rock. And I didn't get into Bruce until I was about 18.
Okay. Can you... by the way, I graduated high school in 77, so I'm probably closer to your dad's generation.
Yes.
You know, and did that, certainly do remember all that. Bobby Darin, though, was one of my mom's favorite artists.
Oh.
Yeah, love that. Can you remember when Bruce did become someone you were had loved, and can you articulate why?
Sure. I had lived in the same house from the day I was brought home from the hospital as a baby to the day I moved out for college. My parents actually still live in my childhood home.
Okay.
And so Jersey all my life. I never like, I moved to Pennsylvania, I moved here. Always Jersey. And I probably wanted to get out of Jersey to some degree, which is the law of New Jersey, as was a Bruce Springsteen fan. There is this desire to get out at all costs. But I didn't go far for college. I went to Philadelphia, which is only 2 hours away. And as I moved down to Philly, something must have just reached out to me where I was always exploring new music. I actually went to school to pursue entertainment management, to work in the entertainment business as an artist manager or an agent. And I must have just picked up Bruce one day and heard a song that I had not heard before. I don't know what the first Bruce song I ever heard was. I'm guessing it was Born in the USA and probably just through osmosis, watching VH1 as a kid, something like that, but not knowing the lyrics, not knowing the story. I don't remember the first Bruce song I heard in earnest. I would guess that the first album I had heard was Born in the USA, because I think it is for most people, especially people who weren't growing up when these albums were being released. And I just felt homesick for New Jersey. I did. I was coming home once a month to see my friends. Most of my friends did not leave the state for school. They went to local schools if they went to college at all. Some of them just started working.
Yeah.
And Bruce was this part of home. Now, I had grown up with Bon Jovi. My mom, definitely a Bon Jovi fan. She loves his butt. She loves his songs. I've seen Bon Jovi at MetLife. It is a transcendent experience. I do recommend seeing Bon Jovi in New Jersey to everyone. as they can. And oh my God, Jay Giles band opened.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah. So but Bon Jovi to me isn't as serious. Right. I think when I was in college, I was still in this very hormonal time, and Bruce felt serious, and I felt that longing, and I felt that love for New Jersey. Yeah. And even though in parts of his life, he hasn't lived in New Jersey, or he's been on the road for significant swaths of time, and you feel that homesickness, even when he's scrambling to get out in this or that song. And I think that's really what resonated with me. I fell in love with a boy sophomore year who did a great cover of I'm Going Down. Like, he released it. It was on iTunes. Probably listened to that version more than the Bruce version, to be honest, because that was the way I had learned that song in particular. Right. I took a class on Bruce Springsteen. Professor Astro, he taught a class on Bruce. He's probably seen Bruce over 100 times. And I wrote an essay on the paracosm of Bruce Springsteen's America. I wrote one about Bruce and Neil Diamond, comparing some of Bruce's American Dream type songs to Neil Diamond's Coming to America, because I'm also a huge Diamondback of the highest order. I love Neil. So it wasn't like Neil sucks and Bruce is great. It was just comparing their images of the American dream hope versus maybe a more challenged hope that Bruce might be talking about. We read about Steinbeck and how Bruce was so inspired by Steinbeck and really looked into the lyricality of what Bruce is talking about and some of his themes, his literary themes in his songs. So by the time I left college, I was huge into Bruce. And I didn't get to see him until 2016, though.
So good. I want to hear that. But I did want to comment. It was funny. I was watching on Disney Plus Miss Marvel, the TV show, right? And it's set in Jersey. And it's absolutely, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's just incredibly charming. So the scene where her parents admit that they adore Bon Jovi, right? And she's just, So my buddy, who I do a Doctor Who podcast with, was like, were you upset that they picked Bon Jovi instead of Bruce? And I'm like, no, I think that's just as valid. And I think Bon Jovi is a funnier joke. I think it's funnier seeing her parents, who are very wonderful actors. I love the characters.
Oh, they were fantastic. You could have imagined they were her real parents. They just really seemed like human, normal people that you would bump into on the street. It was great casting.
And to hear them
saying that they're more into Bon Jovi because that's that big hair, power rock tight pants. Yeah. It's a funnier note. And there's that element of, oh, it's less serious that I mentioned.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, I don't think they filmed any of it in Jersey City, but the show takes place in Jersey City, which is the town over from me.
Okay.
So that's my area of New Jersey.
And I love that they talk about that. And then the Marvels movie, she talks about she's from Jersey. She's proud of that. And I just think that's a wonderful scene. I adore that actress. I just think she rocks that role.
So charming, so sweet, and really real. Like, she looks like a real teenager, which is always nice that they cast someone who isn't 27 years old and is playing a 14-year-old. She looks like a kid. She talks like a kid. It's a very real performance. And I think they wrote a teenager well, which I don't think happens a lot. They write teenagers either too young or much too adult, but she's not like partying and boozing it up, which it's sometimes nice to just see that nerdy kid as the protagonist.
Yeah, so it was.
I really appreciated the show.
Yeah, I did too. I just really did. So you mentioned you didn't see Bruce till 2016. So I always like to preface when I ask my guests this, the amount of times you've seen Bruce perform live is not a fair barometer of how big of a fan you are. There are people that were born at the right time, living in the East Coast, could have seen him 100 times before Darkness came out, because if they caught him young enough. But there's other people that are young or living in elsewhere that have never had a chance to see him. What was about 2016? And do you count how many times you've seen him?
Sure. first, I have one tangential question, and it's going to be a quick exchange.
That's okay. So
you said Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Who is your doctor?
For those of you, and this will take a little bit longer, I think it is interesting that people ask, who's your favorite musician? Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite Star Trek captain?
Yeah.
Who's your favorite Jedi? Who's your favorite superhero? But it's, who's your doctor?
Yeah.
Because there is that. So I came to Doctor, and you guys, if you don't care about Doctor Who, skip ahead 5 minutes. But any chance I can talk Doctor Who on my Bruce Springsteen podcast, I am thrilled. I may pull this and put it at the end of my next Doctor Who episode. I had read something about Torchwood.
Yes.
And so I ended up watching Torchwood and really liking it. And so I went to my buddy who had got me the Torchwood CDs. He had let me borrow the DVDs. I said, I really like Captain Jack. Do you have what episodes of Doctor Who so I could see more Captain Jack? Mm-hmm. And he says, it's just easier to give you this first season. And I understood a little bit of the concept about that. I remember I had never seen a Baker episode, but I knew the scarf and I understood the whole, the same actor, different actors playing it. So I understood the concept. So I put in Christer Eccleston's first disc and just went through it. Yeah. And then immediately went back. I said, okay, so Tennant is my doctor because I think that's the one that I really fell in love with. Now, since, and this is probably about 2013, it was right when Peter Capaldi was taking over. Charles and I started, we were asked to do a Doctor Who podcast. Since Capaldi, we've covered every new Doctor. And then when Who's Not Live, we go back and do Classic Who. So we do Classic Who, we'll do, and we've done Tennant and Eccleston and Smith because we started with Capaldi. So I've learned to appreciate all them. I see the beauty of Eccleston. Obviously, Smith was the first Doctor I watched live. So yeah, but Tennant, and then I just adore Martha. Martha's my favorite companion. So how about you?
I am a 10 girl all the way. Yeah. I think Chris Eccleston is one of the greatest actors of all time. I talk about The Leftovers constantly.
Oh.
He's a marvel in it. He's a great actor. And I love what he did with Nine so much. But I'm a 10 girl. And I am a Rose and Donna Noble kind of girl. Those are my companions. Yeah. I still haven't seen the special with Tennant yet.
I won't tell you anything. That was my next question I was going to ask.
I would happily come talk Doctor Who with you anytime, by the way.
We will do that. And I feel like we could talk Leftovers because it was, first off, I loved him in that. And I loved how Damon Lindelof reset the mood every season. And then about a show that stuck the landing. I just love how he wrapped everything up.
I'm going to have to cut this all for time, but... Yeah. It's not going to show up. Oh, now it will.
Okay.
I have a small online shop and the hats say Carrie Coon deserved an Emmy for The Leftovers. I will happily come talk Eccleston and who we should just do an Eccleston episode.
We should.
For your pod if you want.
Yes.
Anyway, 2016 here so we can cut.
Yeah. So one other thing before, right? So one of my, I do three or four podcasts, but one of them is just an excuse for me and two of my best friends to get together. And we're watching Babylon 5. They've never seen it. And I've seen every episode, which is funny because I met them because they knew Farscape and I didn't. And we went through every episode of Farscape with me being the newbie, them being the vets. And now then we switched. It's been a lot of fun. But we do one-offs, and neither one have had seen Watchmen, the TV series that Damon Lindelof did.
Oh, I love it.
And they are just flabbergasted. And so we just finished 6, And because we were doing two episodes a week, and I said, okay, guys, we're not going to do two and one, just do the last three. And then next Sunday we'll talk about, and I just know they're just going to be losing their crap because
I was in Tulsa in December, and I went to the actual Black Wall Street, the site of Black Wall Street and the site of the massacre and the museum that's erected around it in that actual neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating story.
It is a fascinating story and so well done. Yeah. So I have a very small but lovely Patreon group that get the unedited episodes. So patrons, you got to hear all this fun. Yes. And we will talk more stuff. All right. So 2016, did you just go, hey, screw it, it's time for me to see Bruce live, or what happened?
It was a birthday gift from my mom, my parents, and my mom got me two tickets. And of course, I knew my parents weren't going to want to go. I had a lot of friends who were always working or just could not afford Bruce tickets, which, as you said, and I think very respectfully said, there are so many barriers to seeing Bruce, and you and I can't pretend that he cost $25.
No.
You know, no, I think he cost $25 when my uncle went to see him open for Chicago in the 70s. Bruce
exactly.
Maybe cost $15-$20 then, but yeah. Not now. So I took my childhood best friend's mom, who is like another mother to me, like an aunt or that second mom. Like I text Carol on Mother's Day, like, happy Mother's Day, Mom. I love you. Yeah. I've known her since I was four. So I said, Carol, first of all, is always fun. We've always had a close relationship. And she would go because she was someone who, when I was a kid, really encouraged me to think outside the box. She was that person who was like, oh, watch this movie, or oh, Tara wants to ramble at me about this Beatles song that she loves, and I'm an adult because the other kids that she goes to school with don't care about the Beatles. So she was always that really safe space for me to be myself. And so I said, I would love to spend this night with Carol. So we went. It was so hot, as because you were there, disgustingly hot. Bruce, that was the night that Bruce performed for 4 hours and 4 minutes. So I think it was the longest in the U.S. And then he beat it in Sweden.
Somewhere at the time, it was. Yes, exactly.
It was the longest. It was incredible. He did the sort of James Brown, I'm dying out here, I'm dying out here. And then they got him worked up to continue to the encore. Fireworks during Jersey Girl. I cried. I have the bootleg CD of, it's not even a bootleg. I bought it through Bruce's site.
But exactly.
I have the live CD. And then I think my mom threw it out. So I bought another copy. So now I'm on my second copy. But damn it, that was my first Bruce show.
Yeah.
A guy next to us, like a section over, who I guess his section overlooked like the little stairs to go down into our section, peed. So I literally looked over. This is what I remember most about that Bruce show. I look over and this drunk guy is peeing over the little stairs at MetLife. And I'm like, oh my God, like what? Like probably like Badlands is on and this guy is just like peeing in time to Badlands. I'm like, what is happening?
Oh, that is,
it was wild. I remember
you can't unsee that.
I remember what I wore. I wore a Born in the USA shirt, which now I don't wear an artist merch to the show, but I was like, I guess this works. And I had my hair up with a bandana and a very 50s style and little shorts. I dressed the part, and I've been Bruce for Halloween since, and I basically wore the same thing.
Okay.
But that was my first Bruce show. And then I went to see, I was so in love with that performance. Like I still say that first Bruce show was one of the five happiest nights of my life. It was an incredible experience. I had heard deeper cuts that I hadn't yet discovered. And I was like, oh, this is so great. And then within 2 months, I bought much better tickets, much more expensive tickets to go see him in Philly with my friend Nick. And that show was the hottest I've ever felt in my life.
Okay.
I was covered in sweat. I literally had to go to the bathroom and I'm just going to tell your guests this. They're going to get to know me real well.
Good.
I went to the bathroom just to wash my pits four times during the day. I was that hot. When I got back to the hotel,
I took off my Gaslight Anthem t-shirt that I was wearing and I hung it over the shower rack to dry because it was top to bottom, every stitch soaked in sweat. The next morning, so 8 hours later, I wake up, I'm packing to go home. I go into the bathroom to grab the shirt. It is still wet. That's how hot that show was. That's why he, now keep in mind, he only did a 3-hour and 43-minute set. He kept it short because it was the muggiest, hottest night I have ever experienced in my life. And again, fantastic, perfect show. I've seen him now. I saw him twice in 2016. I met him in 2016. I met him in between the first and second show.
Yeah.
I saw him as the guest on Jimmy Kimmel when Jimmy Kimmel came to Brooklyn a couple years ago. And I saw him twice. Yeah, I saw him twice last year. So I've seen him four times now.
All right, so a couple things I have to ask because it's mandatory. Do you have a feeling about the static set list of last year?
By the time, so I saw him in, I think it was March, whenever the Barclays date was. So it might have been like March.
Okay.
Which I don't like him in Barclays. I wish I had done Madison Square Garden or always preferably an outdoor venue. For
what about that? What about Barclays?
It's indoor. I like him in a stadium.
Okay.
I would either want something really intimate like Stone Pony or the big stadium and you get the full experience.
Gotcha. Okay.
Very luckily, the Jersey show that I had gone to in September when I saw Bruce, because I was nervous about that static set list. I was like, oh, I had been thinking about selling the ticket because I was like, you know what? I had just gotten laid off. I was like, I could use the money right now. But then I found a friend who was like, I'd pay more than what you'd be offering. I'll come with you. And I was like, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah.
By the time he did that show, and also it was the big stadium show, and for all I know, he might have known that this ulcer was acting up and he might have known that he had to take a break soon. He played everything. I got every song I've pretty much ever wanted. So I got really lucky. He did Jungle Land and I screeched. Oh, and in addition to this, I just remembered last Christmas, I was at the Darlene Love show when he came out. So I've seen him four times and I've been in the same room as him three times. Yeah, I adore Darlene. I go see her Christmas show every year and he came out to give her an award and love up on her, which who wouldn't? But yeah, so by the time I got to that September 2023 show at MetLife, he had added to the set list. I think it was also just Jersey's the favorite. Yeah. So Jersey got Jungle Land and some of the songs that he wasn't doing. Sure. But I always wish he would mix it up. I'm glad I got lucky, but I know that there were a lot of people who probably booked 3-4 shows within that like March to April range and were disappointed to see the same set over and over.
Yeah, I was okay people being disappointed. I was unhappy with people being angry. I do think I've said this multiple times that I do think the people that have the most room to be pissed off are the ones that paid for all the digital downloads in advance. And now they go, hey, wait a minute, they're the same show. Thing.
Yeah, I get that.
What the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
So that's great. I want to talk about you. Tell me the story of meeting him.
Okay. I had broken my foot in the summer of 2016, maybe early September. I was leaving an Airbnb. My ex-boyfriend was picking me up. I had stayed there by myself for a week in Philly because I have friends there. I went to college there and all that.
Yeah.
And I had my big suitcase in one arm and I had a mason jar that I was going to bring and leave in the Airbnb sink on my way out.
Okay.
So I have the suitcase and the mason jar. I'm going down the stairs. I'm going a little quick because my ex was waiting outside, the car stalling. And all of a sudden I lose my footing on the step.
Okay.
And in my head, I'm like, this glass is going to break and shatter like in my eye. Like just immediately you're having these thoughts. So I let the suitcase go and I land Hamlet style with the skull out, like on the one knee. But in the process to doing that. The mason jar is totally unharmed, but my foot folded in like this.
Oh no.
So I broke two toes, like my foot truly folded.
No.
And for about 10 hours, I just thought I would walk it off.
Yeah.
Because that's me. So eventually I could not walk
You're
it
Jersey
off.
You're Jersey tough.
Right? Yeah.
You're Jersey tough. But there, you know.
Yeah. So you know,
by the way, I wanted to mention this. I'm a big Penn and Teller fan, and I listen to Penn Jillette's podcast, and he always talks about he and Teller are just carny trash that just have gotten that. Successful. So that's when you mentioned that's your jersey. Cute. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I eventually went to the hospital. They gave me some Percocets, which I am completely sober, but so if I'm on a Percocet for some reason, which is only if I've ever been like getting my wisdom teeth out or broke my foot, just giggle monster all the way because I am the biggest lightweight you've ever seen. And I had a cast on for a number of weeks, but I was like, I bought a ticket to meet Bruce. I want to go meet Bruce. And my parents are like, you are nuts. And I was like, I'm meeting him, God damn it. So I got one of those little stools that folds out that you can kneel on.
Sure.
So I brought that. I got there. I was the first person online. I got there about 4 hours before he like got on the stage. I wound up talking to a bunch of people. I met a woman online who named her daughter Stevie after like the fans who have seen him 47 times. When it's me who's, I was maybe 25. And then you have these folks who are double, triple my age. And I'm just like their little sister. And they thought it was cute.
Yeah.
They're like, who the hell are you? And I was like, I've seen him once. And they were like, it's okay, we forgive you. Like, they're sweet. So I was online and I'm like hobbling on my crutches. And eventually, after 4 hours, I get up to close to the front. And someone finally, whether it was Bruce's team or the store events team, they look and they're like, can we please make sure this girl goes like quickly? And they like, they made sure I was first and they made sure I got on that stage fast. I met Bruce. He looked at, he was like, oh my God, look at you. That was his reaction. He's like, you're a nut. Like in a sweet way. He was just like, you are a nut. He waited to meet me on these crutches. And I was like, hi, Bruce. And Danny was photographing. So there's probably a photo. I've literally emailed his website. I'm like, I know you took a picture of me in my crutches because I remember posing for it where I'm shrugging with the crutches.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? I had to be here. I wish I could have found it, but I have a great picture with Bruce.
Yeah,
it's hanging up behind me in my bedroom. I'm smiling ear to ear. And for the listeners who have not met him, he smells delicious. He smells like a mint leaf.
I love that.
Like a bushel of mint leaves. He smells, he's the best smelling celebrity I've ever been around. Confidently, I can say this.
That's nice.
Bruce smells minty and delicious.
I love that. That is good to know. So let's get away from Bruce for a minute.
Sure.
I want to talk a little bit more about your writing.
Okay.
And how did this, by the way, I signed up for your Substack, and so I'm going to let you promote that at the end.
Thanks.
But what you talked about, you were in college, you were thinking about doing entertainment and doing a lot of work. Where do you think your creative bug came from? Talk to me about that.
I was on another podcast pretty recently and I had said, oh, I don't really come from a creative family. And as I was saying it, I went, I'm a fucking liar. No, I do come from a creative family. I had qualified this with my grandmother crocheted, but my grandmother crocheted. During World War II, she got a factory job. And if you know the classic red and white thread that they use to bundle cake boxes, my grandmother learned how to crochet with the cake thread. And she crocheted for about 70 years until the day she died. She taught most of the women in the family how to crochet. My aunts are exceptional chefs and bakers, and they make the best food. Dad has beautiful taste in music. He's not a creative person himself, but there's that. I do actually have a pretty creative family in that way. I do have a cousin who has written and has some had himself published essays and things like that.
Yeah.
So I do come from a creative family, but it's not in the way that Paul McCartney's father was a musician and
right.
or you know, not in a nepotism baby kind of way either. No one in my family is really huge into music, into performing. My godfather has a keyboard in his apartment, but no one, yeah. I'm a concert pianist. So yeah, I guess it is some sense of osmosis. I always look at my late grandmother and I always call her my guiding light. So yeah. I guess in a way I had to be creative if I want to follow in her footsteps. And that's probably the easiest answer. But yeah, I do come from a family where there is some creative spirit, but it's not always in the conventional ways of I'm an author, I'm a this, I'm a that. My grandma Tootie was a hairdresser for many years. That's a creative art in a way. So
yeah.
there are those little spurts of it, but I'm probably the one who's most publicly known for my creative work and the person who has an artistic output in a way that's been commodified, whether someone's paid for my Substack or downloaded my music or bought my music.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of music? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. I had this terrible thing happen to me during the pandemic, which is a song came to me in a dream. Lyrics came to me in a dream. I got out of bed at 3 a.m. I walked over to my cell phone, sent myself the lyrics. The next day, the terrible thing happened when I opened this up and in my head, I thought, oh, maybe it's a poem, maybe it's whatever. And I sung the song to myself. And then I went, shit, I think I have to start making music. And so for a couple years after that, I took singing lessons. I bought a guitar, taught myself how to play a guitar, taught myself how to play the piano. That was my pandemic hobby, like other people got really fit or learned how to make sourdough starter. That was my pandemic fixation. And I put out some music under the name Sweaty Lamar, which is a reference to Hedy Lamarr, but sweaty because there are two types of Italians, the sweaty ones or the hairy ones. I'm the sweaty one.
Okay.
And I wanted something that kind of felt like a Mae West, something flippant, something a little vulgar. So I thought Sweaty Lamar mixed that old Hollywood with me being a little trash rat from New Jersey.
Okay.
And my lyrics are definitely inspired by Bruce. There was a song that I never put out called Bruce Song, and it fit Bruce's like chord progressions and talking about going home and going back home and whether or not you can really leave. But I went dark. I went dark and romantic as opposed to Bruce, who sometimes goes dark and, as I say, corporate, because he's talking about that stoic factory worker type, the man who would be an artist if only life had worked out differently. And I know that a lot of people say that Bruce cosplays at being working class, and I say, screw it. You know what? He's voicing his experiences of his father, number one. He's also voicing experiences of his uncles and his neighbors. And then also giving people who maybe don't feel, especially men in this, men who don't know if they're allowed to feel because of the way the patriarchy has moderated male feeling. And Bruce gives them permission to feel and think and emote and cry and grieve and long. And so I don't let anybody say around me that Bruce is cosplaying the working class. He came from it.
Yeah. And that's that. And I'm a firm believer, Tara, that, you know, my mom did not work outside the home. My father was career military. And I can remember going to the grocery store on base, which is the commissary. Sure. And she would buy half gallons of milk and freeze them so that we would have milk. Because back then you got paid once a month in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to make that last. And there are scars, and I'm going to use that word. There are things that happen to you when you grow up, quote unquote, poor, that never leave you.
Absolutely.
And so I think when they say that Bruce is, yes, and he sold his catalog for $500 million. He's doing okay. But I think there are things that always you can't get past. I think it's always part of you.
Absolutely. It's huge. If you have a I'm trying to think of a responsible kind of example, but if you were young and came from a war-torn country,
yeah,
and you come here and you're 3 years old, okay, yeah, maybe you had a beautiful life here or in England or in another country, yeah, where there wasn't this kind of war and you weren't a refugee. But you grow up seeing the scars of your parents. You, yeah, grow up with a certain mindset. You grow up with, in more extreme cases, oh, you as a kid were, there was malnutrition. Like, yeah, Audrey Hepburn, I think this has been talked about with Audrey Hepburn a lot. She, you know, experienced malnutrition as a child, and that's part of why her frame is so small. And
yeah,
yeah, that one formational thing affected her health, her movement, her physicality for life. And it doesn't really go away. And especially with the way that we know that Bruce was so impacted by his father, for good or bad, and yeah, his mother, who may Adele's memory be a blessing.
Yeah.
When he adored his mother and loved her and learned from her. And so he's taking part of her experiences and putting it in this music too. You know, you, yeah, can argue that some of these songs about getting out of Jersey are love letters to her and maybe dreams she had that and didn't get to fulfill. You don't know. So yeah, I always, sorry, I went on a total tangent. No. What question did you ask?
We were just talking about his music and every that. So no, you were perfect. And
so,
yeah, yes, we were talking, yeah, about your music and how you did that.
Yes, screw my music compared to Bruce's, but he, yeah, definitely is an inspiration to me in what I write. New Jersey is an inspiration to me in what I write. There is no me without my New Jersey upbringing. If, yeah, I had been born and raised in Oklahoma, I would be a very different person. If I had been born and raised in Manitoba, I would be a very different person. Yeah. Jersey is important to me, and Bruce as a main character of New Jersey is formative to me, much in the way that Glenn Danzig as a character of New Jersey is formative to me in a way, and Brian Fallon from the Gaslight Anthem. Also, I am a massive Gaslight Anthem fan. Massive. I've been in one of their music videos. I've seen them many times. And Brian notably apes Bruce. He's taken lyrics from Bruce and admitted it later, and they're in the 59 sound. Yeah. So I can't be a Gaslight Anthem fan without being a huge Bruce fan. There's no way to remove those two people, especially now that they did a duet, which was,
yeah,
history books. It didn't come out anywhere near my birthday, but I'm convinced that was my birthday present from Bruce and Brian specifically. I was like, how it finally happened. And it's great. If it had sucked, I would have flung myself out of a moving train, but it's great. And I love listening to it. But so, anyway, I'm a singer. I was just gonna say, I am a very mediocre singer. I like to think I was a good songwriter, or as I call, okay, myself, a sinner songwriter. My stuff is probably more confessional than Bruce's, because Bruce is talking about characters. There are these mythological women that he's pursuing and what they mean and what they're symbols for. But I would say that the most influential song of Bruce's that inspired me is Brilliant Disguise, because I do think that's one of his most confessional, if not most confessional songs. I really think that's speaking to his romantic perception, his self-perception, and that is what I was doing in my music.
Yeah. Do you still make music?
No. I am thinking about taking the songs that I wrote but did not record and putting them in a chat book and releasing them almost as poetry.
Okay.
I did a reading very recently where I read one of my songs that has never seen the light of day, and I read it as a poem or a spoken word piece. Singing was very hard for my psyche. I had imposter syndrome to a debilitating degree. It really challenged my mental health and my self-worth. And I said, you know what? Not only is it very expensive to put out music, but it is expensive on my soul. I am not liking myself. And my favorite part of this is just writing. So why don't I just be intentional about writing for a bit? And the Substack is free for me to create. And my writing output, or my production output, if you will, has been so maximized. I put out something every single week, and I have for almost a year now. I've not missed a week. It was better for me to shift away from music, but
What do you choose to talk about? How does that come around?
In my songwriting or in my...
In your blog, in your Substack.
So it's really whatever is going on in the week. I am a woman of double, if not triple entendre. So my weekly Substack posts are called The Week in Me. And people are like, does that mean... I was like, yes, it's supposed to be an Austin... Yeah. I grew up with Austin Powers. That was the first like dirty movie I had ever seen. Okay. So yeah, of course I'm doing some stupid joke about The Week in Me. Yeah. And so really it depends on what's going on for the week. Okay. I wrote one about how my boss at my last job touched my hair. She had, instead of just saying, oh, hey, you have like a flyaway hair, she reached out and touched my hair. And I wrote this whole silly, stupid rant about this. And I made jokes about Saturday Night Fever and Tony going, would you just watch the hair?
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing. I've written more seriously about how society has basically come to forbid expressions of grief. We don't wear black armbands anymore. We don't wear mourning veils. And how hard it was to grieve my grandmother when the world kept spinning madly on. I wrote something recently about Chris Pratt playing the Pringles man in a Super Bowl commercial, and how he's, because I was joking that the Pringles man must be Italian because he's got that mustache and that head of hair.
Right.
And how dare Chris Pratt invade my culture? And my culture as an Italian is not a costume. And I wrote this like Cecil B. Demented rant about Chris Pratt pretending to be an Italian and it being cultural appropriation. So I really write about whatever is on my brain that week. And my brain is like a map, and there's a little rat who's looking for the cheese, but the rat is on an ayahuasca trip, and that is my brain. Make of that what you will. But yeah, I write about whatever comes to mind. I can get political. I can get silly and stupid. I can get depressed and down. Again, it really just, it's what's on my mind and what is corrupting my brain that week.
So what's next for you creatively? What's next for you? Because you've gone through a lot, and I admire that. You are reinventing yourself. And I think that is one of the reasons why I love Bruce, is I do think he continues to evolve as an artist and as a musician and as a songwriter.
Yeah, I would say so. He's not in the Taylor Swift or Rihanna way, where reinvention means a new haircut and a different font for the album art and that kind of thing. But look how long it took him to do the Standards album. I think that's pretty impressive. And I will say, he didn't just go back into the Cole Porter Standards. He went into picks that were a little less conventional and a little more far flung. And I've heard some of them live, and I'm like, yeah, he picked interesting songs at least.
He did.
And also, I'm just going to say this because this is a Bruce fact about me. The Rising makes me cry hysterically because my father was at 9/11 as a fireman. So of course that song just gets me. And so he is still reaching in and developing these characters. And that's something I appreciate. It's not, he could be complaining about things that as a rich man, we're all like, oh my God, really? Like you're going to complain about this stupid thing in a song. No, he does still try to create other stories. I think the loss of Clarence is something that has shaped him. I'm wondering if there will be songs about his mother and that grief experience. And if he doesn't want to create them, that's his business. I truly do not think any artist like owes us commentary on their personal life and pain, but
no,
he does let his experiences, which can be very heavy. He has been through a lot and he does let us in some ways and acknowledges that he does work on himself to grow. And he, unlike the River Tour set, or not the River Tour set list, but this recent tour set list, he is not a static character. So it's less about, I'm going to do a jazz record now, which I don't really think is necessarily the conduit to being this great prolific artist. Someone like Beyonce does it immaculately every time, but that's really impressive that she does that, and rare that somebody can tackle those genres. It makes you stand up. Bob Dylan should not be doing Christmas music necessarily. And I'm saying this as a fellow Jew. I'm like, Bob, Robert, okay, come on now. Bruce has still tried to evolve, and I really think he has not rested on his laurels much. So you and I are fully in agreement there. Yeah. And I like to think I'm the same way about myself. Okay. What's next for me is I've been doing some readings, like in New York and in Philly, and I want to keep doing those. I actually just booked one for April and publicly put myself out there in that way. And that will inspire me to write more poems or write more personal essays or become a better live performer. My poems were recently published in an anthology on sexy poetry. That's the second time I've ever submitted poetry to anyone, and it got accepted, and three of them got accepted.
That's out awesome. Of the three
I submitted. So I definitely want to explore poetry more. I recognize that I'm not a John Donne kind of poet, and I'm not going to be writing about trees or fleas, but I want to explore the sort of Rupi Kaur small confessional poems that really just feel like sentences in a rattled mind. I want to keep doing the Substack. I want to finish my novel, which I have 200 pages written of, but I'm terrified to go back to. And I would like to release a book of poetry, or as I mentioned, a book of my old lyrics, and have the great honor of someone wanting to publish my work in full, in a complete volume. Those are the big goals for the year. I actually got to cross off a couple of my goals that I set at the beginning of the year, because I did get a poem accepted and I hit 1,000 Substack subscribers and I got to do these readings. But yeah, I want to keep checking off my goal list.
That's awesome. I love that.
Thank you.
Tara, I feel like we've just scratched the surface. You're going to have to come back.
I would love that. I love that. Name the day.
Yeah. We just got to do this again.
That would be fabulous.
So I normally ask, what have I not asked you that I should, but I'm going to save that for our next visit.
Okay. So, great.
Yeah. Because I just think I feel like I could have you on once a month that we could just feature, like, Tuesdays with Tara, right?
Anytime. I'll come on the Whovian podcast. I will talk about Eccleston, wherever you want me. I have not seen Babylon 5, but if you want another newbie in there to just react to a random like season 6 episode, I'll be like, who's this guy? And try to make it funny. So really,
that would
just
be fun.
Call That's me good. Anytime. I'm around.
That sounds great. All right, before I let you go, I've got to ask you the Mary question. I end every podcast with this story. Jay Armstrong is a retired high school English teacher, but when he was teaching, he would give his students the lyrics to Thunder Road, and they would treat it as if it was a poem, talking about all the imagery Bruce discusses, the themes he goes. They would talk about Robert Frost and other poets and similar. Yep. And then he would ask the question to his class, does Mary get in the car? So Tara, that is your question. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
I thought long and hard about this today.
Good.
Yes, she does. But they come back.
Okay.
They both come back. If I were to look at Bruce as a person and a self-insert into his songs, then yes, you leave Jersey, you get out, you try to make a break for it. But ultimately, there is something about New Jersey that has its hooks in you, and you always come back. And I can't pretend that the protagonist of Thunder Road comes back and buys a beautiful mansion in Rumson or Freehold. I think Bruce has two, actually. But maybe they come back in defeat. And I don't love that because it's not hopeful, but for a close read of Bruce Springsteen, I do think it's true. And it's okay that it's true. Not everybody makes it. And I know this seems very depressed, and I'm not even in a depression cycle right now, I swear.
Yeah.
But I think they go off into the night, and I think somewhere around Tucson, they run out of money and they have to come back.
Okay. That's I like that answer. That's a
What
great
is your
answer.
answer? Are you allowed to share with
Yeah,
me?
no, I've told many times I am an optimist. I believe yes. I believe that they she says yes, and they figure out a way to live happily ever after, in a way that all successful marriages are, where it's not always good and it's not always bad, but it's there is good times and bad times. We joke, my wife and I'll be married 40 years, and we often joke that it's been 38 of our happiest years of our lives, because there's probably about 2 years in there where we couldn't stand each other, mostly raising a teenage boy.
Of course. I have a recommendation for you,
Okay.
actually, based on your read of this. Have you ever seen the movie Sing Street?
I do not know if I have.
Whoa. It
Okay.
is in 80s. It was filmed and written and everything more recently, but it takes place in the 80s. It takes place in Ireland around the time when abortion was not, like,
Yeah.
very, you couldn't have sex if you weren't married. And it takes place in this very conservative era. And it's about a group of private school boys who start a band.
Okay.
And I will tell you a quick personal story about why I love this movie, but
Okay.
your read of Thunder Road feels very apt for the way that movie ends.
Okay.
And there's a song in the movie, and now these are songs that the boys write and perform. So it is a
Sure.
musical, but not in the Singing in the Rain style of
Yeah.
musical. And
Okay.
there's a song called Go Now. And the protagonist's brother sings this, it's his song.
Okay.
And the song is, you're gonna have to leave now if you ever want to go, and you have to go, and I demand you go. And it's that almost, what is it, White Fang? Like, I need you to leave, go. I don't love you
Yeah.
anymore. Like, heartbreaking, bittersweet. And when my grandmother died in 2021, Valentine's Day, so the anniversary was recently, not that she's not on my mind every day, but
Right.
when she died, she was so full of life and energy. And even though she was 99 and 10 months old, she always was like a young woman. She just has this beautiful joy and lightness. And she was like frisky and funny and wacky. And the first thing I did when my dad called me was I played the song Go Now.
Okay.
And if you listen to it, I think you will understand why I chose that to be her
Okay.
song to send her off with. But
Okay.
you, as an optimist, I think will love this movie. And it might be something cute to watch with your wife because it's a very sweet romantic movie.
All
But yeah,
right.
my
So
rec for
here,
you and the listeners.
all right. So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna end the podcast, and then we're gonna pull up the calendar, and we're gonna find our next spot. And our story is going to be, I'm gonna watch the movie, and we're going to do an
Oh,
episode on discussing that.
I love that. Yeah, and we can figure out maybe where Bruce fits in, and it could be like
Yeah.
that cast. That sounds great. Yeah,
Okay.
when do you want me?
I'm going to wrap up first, and then we'll do. Tell again how they can find you on Substack.
Fabulous. My URL is taragiancaspro.substack.com. I will let you look at the episode notes to figure out how to spell my last name, all of you. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter at Sweaty Lamar.
And I will pull the link and include it in the show notes to go. There are two different tiers. There's a perfectly free tier where you get some of the work, and then a paid tier where I assume you get more if it works like the rest of Substacks that I are part of.
Me to your Patreon and everything, so I have it.
I will do that. That sounds great. Wow, I feel like I've made a friend, and that's
Great.
the best part. All
This
right.
was great. We had so much fun today. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, listeners, go check out the Substack. So we're going to end with, so when you look at me, you better look hard and look twice. Is that me, baby, or just a brilliant disguise? Tonight our bed is cold. I'm lost in the darkness of our love. God have mercy on the man who doubts what he's sure of. Thank you, Tara. Thank you, listeners. Be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for checking out this episode. If you enjoyed our discussion, I hope you will check out other episodes of the podcast. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans around the world about the power and magic of music. Please follow me on all my socials. I'm still on Twitter, aka X, as Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Setlusting Bruce. The show and I are both on Facebook as well. I'm a part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetic order. I am part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. Both Perfectly Good Podcast and Setlisting Bruce are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, where there are dozens of great podcasts about music. Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. I'm joined each week by Lou and Karen on Last Best Hope for Conversation, as we discuss Babylon 5 and other pop culture topics. This show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And I would mean the world to me if you could send me feedback on any of the podcasts. Or please reach out to schedule time for you to join me on a future episode. Getting to talk to people about their love of music and their favorite musicians and other creative endeavors is a passion of mine. And I hope that the conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.